Welcome to the Dollars and Cents of Westworld podcast, where we try to figure out if it would be possible to run Westworld as an actual business. This exercise is going to cover the entire show, so be aware, spoilers will follow. Also, we're talking about running Westworld as a functioning business. This isn't a criticism of the story itself, as we understand there's dramatic license at work here. Please don't send us hate mail.
Hello, and welcome back to the Dollars and Cents of Westworld. Today, we are going to be starting a discussion around the three laws of robotics first put forth by Asimov. This is probably going to spiral around in a few different directions, but we'll see how it goes. With me today are the usual suspects. We've got Tom, Joe, Pat, I am Chris, and we have a special guest with us today. Trying to get him in before fall hits. We have Paul with us.
Hi.
So with that wonderful introduction from Paul, you want to tell us anything about yourself?
Sure. I think like everybody else on the podcast, I have a pretty strong history in QA. I'm doing kind of more like back-end engineering now, but spent a lot of time writing automated tests for a variety of different back-end systems. So when I approach a problem, I try to approach it from the idea of, like, how do we test this consistently and, correctly, like, completely? I have no idea.
Perfect. So to get back to our topic, three laws violations. What are they? How do they apply? How big of an issue is it with Westworld?
Well, before we even get into violations, I think we should probably go over...
explain the laws.
Thank you.
Who Asimov is, why they're important.
Joe, would you like to tell the people who Asimov is?
I have an Asimov factoid. So Asimov is the only author who has something in every section of the Dewey Decimal System. That's how prolific he was.
I'm so glad you're here today.
I don't even know what that means. I don't know the Dewey Decimal System.
That's okay. We'll let Joe explain the Dewey Decimal System.
I think that's in another episode. Stick around and wait for it.
So the three laws. Three laws themselves are supposed to be in place to ensure that robotics can be useful. Pat will give us a rundown of each of the three before we start tackling them further.
Sure. And not just useful, but safe for people to use, I think is really key there.
That is an important distinction.
Right. You could still get significant use out of robots without any of these laws in Asimov's stories, but they'd be dangerous. And even in the many stories that he wrote with these three laws, there's always edge cases, hairy situations, problems that show that making robots safe is difficult. So I'm going to go through these three laws. I'm going to go through these three laws, and they're in order of precedence. So the first law is that a robot can't hurt a human being or, through an action, allow one to be hurt. Paraphrased, of course. The second is that robots have to follow orders that are given to them by human beings. And the third is that, outside of one and two, they're not allowed to cause themselves to be harmed. And so the idea of that order of precedence is that if there's a conflict between these, the lower number ought to be...
it's given priority.
Taken. Yeah, it's given in priority. So you're allowed to damage yourself to keep a human safe. You're allowed to damage yourself if you're ordered to do so. But if I ordered a robot that was following the three laws to go attack Chris, that would not be allowed because my orders don't supersede the safety of another human being. So that's the whole idea behind those three laws.
Now, do you want to go towards violations that we know that what the laws are?
Yeah, I love how everyone just looked at me like, yeah, violations. Let's let Chris talk about it. You all are dicks, but it's okay. So, yeah, thank you again, Pat, for explaining those. We do see, I think, clearly for anyone that has watched the show at this point, that everything that Pat has just explained gets violated the shit of at some point in time, except for one of them, I would argue. But we can talk about that a little bit further. If we want to start off, let's start talking about the first law, because it's arguably the most important one. It's arguably the one that we need to have addressed, especially given that we have these robots interacting with clients.
People, yeah.
Yeah, we're having people give us money.
Without the first law, we don't have a business.
I wouldn't necessarily say we don't have a business. I would say we don't have a very safe business.
Okay, that's fair.
So before we dive into the particulars on these laws, I wonder if we might have a short conversation about, can we run Westworld if we had total adherence to these rules? I mean, as you get further out from the center of the park, it's more dangerous. And if you really have the hosts there honoring the first rule, not just them not hurting people directly, but them not allowing humans to come to harm, I think you're going to run into a conflict really quickly. I don't know that we can have that kind of experience if we're going to have total adherence to the first law, and that's just the first law. We might have the same problems with two and three.
So is your concern essentially that, like when you go to a haunted house, you're not ever in any actual danger? You will feel like there's jump scares and stuff. You'll feel fear, but like you don't necessarily feel like ensconced in the story. So like, I guess my question is like, are you postulating that without the ability to like have some wiggle room on these laws, that like you can't have such like an immersive storyline happening like on the periphery where things are more dangerous, air quotes?
Yeah, I think I am. I think if we take maybe the most extreme example, we have someone in the show that is an incredible fan of this place. He has probably been there more than anybody. I'm talking about the Man in Black.
Man in Black, yeah.
And he's been going to this park for 30 years regularly. He's very rich, so we know he can afford it. I'd be surprised if there were many people that were more into this park than him. And he keeps pushing the limits. He wants danger. He doesn't want a totally safe park. And we could argue about whether or not we want people like the Men in Black as our customers, but you're going to have customers who aren't getting what they want if we make this park totally safe.
So that's a valid point. Allowing your customers to come to harm, though, isn't usually good business practice, even if there's the inherent risk. So for sake of example, companies that do bungee jumping and the like you sign a waiver because there's a chance something could happen that ends up getting you killed or maimed, but that's not the intent. So even if you're trying to be immersive, and the Man in Black, I also feel is a pretty bad example there, because you got a guy who's on the board of directors, a guy who's clearly obsessed because of some of the actions he's taken over the years. And I'm kind of okay with not making that guy the happy guy. Like, out of all the other customers that you have, if you have one that isn't satisfied because he can't actually get shot in the face, that's probably a business trade-off I'm willing to make.
They signed the waiver. It's their own fault.
Right, yeah. He signed a waiver, so we let him take the shot right to the face. It's okay.
I think we can all agree he was much happier after being shot in the face.
That, okay, yeah. So he may have been happier after he experienced, like, what was it, a broken arm? Or something like that.
Yeah, close to that.
She gave him, yeah, whatever it was. But exception, not the rule, right? So do you want to build your business model around the exceptions? If we're looking to have, looking at it from a purely monetary perspective, if you're looking for people to have that kind of experience, is it going to up your costs as well? To be able to have that kind of a setup. Two, if you are fudging on the laws a little bit to make that experience more immersive, what other potential problems do we run into?
Yep. Side effects. What's right. going to happen?
Yeah, I feel like it goes back to, I think, Pat, you and I have had this discussion before previously when talking about Asimov. A slight loophole violation in any single law was enough for him to write an entire novel about the repercussions. You're talking about hedging a good chunk of them in order to appeal to the customer base. And we've seen in the show what happens when you start playing loose with the laws.
Sure. And I think we're going to have to accept some kind of trade-off. I think implicitly in the at least the first law, there's already some level of danger that a robot, a host, but in Asimov stories, they're always robots. There's some level of danger of risk that is acceptable, even though statistically it's going to lead to human harm. To use your example of bungee jumping, there is a statistical risk with bungee jumping. You don't know who's going to die doing it, but if you have millions of people doing it, people are going to get hurt. Some of them probably going to die. Now, if there were robots running bungee jumping companies, they would have to be okay with that statistical risk. Even though it's small, it's still there. There are still going to be people that die. If you don't allow any of that, I mean, I could imagine a story, I think actually it's not really Asimov's work, but the iRobot movie involves the robots concluding that no amount of risk is safe, and they're basically locking everybody in their homes and securing the entire city. Mm-hmm. So I think the lesson here is that it's very difficult with a couple of sentences to get the outcome you want in a very nuanced situation. So what I was trying to kick off here wasn't, you know, me saying let's scrap the rules or let's create a lot of loopholes. It was more, what do we want? What are we okay with? We understand that these laws are good ideas, but I think we also have to admit that they're not perfect. I mean, even Asimov knew that. That's how he wrote all those stories.
I think what this kind of comes down to is like software. Like there's the kind of like, it's almost an adage at this point. It's like computers do what you tell them to do, not what you want them to do. So like ultimately, if you boil down any like the three or like any of the extended laws, it comes down to like, are you articulating what your intention is correctly?
I feel like that was a night and day change. Years ago when you told me a computer does exactly what you tell it to do, not what you want it to do. And that has changed the way that I see everything that I do.
So I want to point out one more thing, partly because it's relevant, partly because it's at Joe's expense. Joe, you're hungover right now, and I'm not sure a robot following the three laws would have allowed you to drink as much as you did last night.
Screw that robot.
Kind of the point. There's a bar in Westworld, right?
That's fair.
That's something I've never thought of.
Being overserved?
That too. I mean, now we have bars that don't have bartenders. It's go up and you serve yourself, but there's still some limit. Like, you can only have, I think, 36 ounces of alcohol.
That's why you drink whiskey.
It's a lot of whiskey.
For who?
You're right. That's something I've never thought about, though. A robot saying, no, man, you are cut off. You are too drunk. I'm going to make the morning great for you.
By that same token, then, Pat, would you say that if any of the hosts were aware that they were infected with STDs, they would remove themselves from service in the brothel?
I don't think you need the three laws for that, but I think that's a good practice anyway. Yeah, your MRSA-infected host should, if they know they're infected with MRSA, not be in the brothel anymore. That would be great.
I don't know. I kind of foresee a situation where, like, just like you would with a real person, you have to have that very difficult conversation. And I think for season two of Westworld, that would just be, like, a great episode to watch a host be like, you know, so before we start, I have something we need to talk about.
If you are willing to accept this level of risk, please press one. Okay. So we do see that there's some wiggle room a little bit. If we strictly adhere to everything that, that Asimov first theorized around, we probably don't have much of a park to have fun in if it's being run by hosts. Or at least it lowers the level of interactivity that the clients would potentially have. With that in mind, though, what kind of blatant violations of, let's start with the first law, because it's, as we mentioned earlier, it's arguably the most important one. It has the highest priority. What kind of blatant violations of the first law did we see throughout the show that we definitely can't have happen?
Doesn't William tie his future brother-in-law naked to a horse and send him in the blazing sun off all alone?
Yeah.
That horse is a host.
Pat's got a fair point, right? If the we talked about in the first episode that, you know, we were sanding horses, remember? So we were saying that those horses were hosts. Does that type of host have enough cognitive ability to know if what they are doing is right or wrong?
So I think that if we're going to have some form of the three laws be followed by hosts, even if the, let's call it the personality the host is running, is not very smart, like a horse, you know, like the birds that we see that are apparently programmable and probably share some amount of hostness or software or something like that with the hosts, you need enough processing capability to be able to handle those three laws. Not being able to do that means some of your hosts aren't three laws compatible.
Are there non like human robots in Asimov's worlds? Like, I feel like the term he uses, like robots, we tend to think of more as like androids, like very like humanoid. So like, I wonder if we're actually trying to apply something in a much broader scope than it was originally intended.
None. Well, at least some of the robots in his stories are not humanoid. There was a rover on a planet that got stuck between two areas because the danger was too great. And so it was sort of looping around in the safe zone, bouncing between violating one law and another. And I very much got the impression that that rover on an airless planet was, well, a rover, not humanoid. But I see your point. Yeah, we're definitely applying this to things that weren't explicit. I'd be very surprised if there were explicitly robotic horses and birds in one of his stories. Though I could be wrong, he was a prolific writer.
Yeah, there's definitely, like, the world has changed so much. Like, I don't think that the scope of there being things like Raspberry Pis all the way up to like supercomputers was really the way that we thought of the future before. We were just like, everyone will have a supercomputer and it'll be great. All computers will be supercomputers. So like the idea that like we could come up with complex laws that the hardware can't actually support is probably not something that at least Asimov challenged himself with.
That being the case though, we still probably want to make sure that anything in the park has some sort of safety protocols in place to ensure customer safety. The horse is a great example. I don't know that you can necessarily have the complexity, as Paul said, to handle not running off with a naked client on your back, but we see some other things, stuff with the Man in Black. Like, clearly, the horse isn't trying to not hurt him in those scenarios where, after he's already received, what is it, like 5 or 12 concussions? I kind of lost count throughout the show. But
where he's got the noose tied around his neck, right, tied to a horse?
Right. Like, the horse... Do we even put that much processing power in it at that point so that it knows not to do something like that? It's worth consideration.
That seems like an oversight on the part of the park if the horse doesn't have that much processing power. I mean, a horse's head is pretty big. You got to be able to fit the equipment, the computer, inside the horse. I could understand if in that little bird that we saw, you couldn't get it in there because the bird's much smaller, but I don't think you have that excuse with a horse. And you're gonna need some kind of security in your small animals. I mean, we see a rattlesnake at one point that I think Ford pauses with his hand. Well, let's not give, you know, poisonous bites to our guests. That seems bad. Or even maybe non-poisonous bites.
Venomous.
The snake is venomous. The bite is poisonous, isn't it? Whatever.
How do you do it, Pat? That'll be cut.
So the other thing to take into account there, though, is the cost benefit, right? How expensive is it to maintain the same level of processing power in your horses as you have in your hosts? We never really see what the price point is throughout the course of the show for the hosts themselves. There's some allusions to the fact that it's costly, but we don't know how that factors into the overall profit margin. We don't know. We really have no concrete numbers around any of this.
I think they're a little, like, they send some mixed messages about cost in this show. And it might just be because it's bouncing between, you know, two points in time, 30 years apart. I could totally understand if the technology costs were different. But Maeve gets printed by two, you know, idiot low-level lab techs. And nobody's looking at that cost. Nobody's looking at that machine going, ooh, man, they just spent, you know, $1 million on a host. We need to keep our eye on that. They just get to. Which says to me, I mean, that price can't be too prohibitive, right?
Well, didn't the man in black mention at one point that the hosts used to be much more mechanical, and in he held them in higher esteem when they were. He said that they were, like, nearly perfect. And now we use, he says that we use, like, biological components because it's cheaper and more cost-effective.
So they follow the Arizona iced tea approach to their manufacturing processes.
As long as the host itself still costs 99 cents, we can keep the ticket prices the same.
I would be amazed if they knew how much it costs to print a single host. They seem to have no data, and their decisions are just like, yeah, that seems like a good idea.
They're run like a classic startup, though. Like, what storyline requires you to control the bird? And, like, horses are trainable. Like, if you've been to a Disney Wild West show, they have real horses that they train to do things that seem pretty incredible. Like, I've seen a horse get up on its back haunches and do, like, a little, like, trot at medieval times. Like, how badly do you need a robot horse?
So now I wish we'd covered this back in some of our liability stuff. I kind of think that the idea of a park where you can do whatever you want, coupled with live horses but fake everything else, you're just asking for your animal cruelty lawsuit, right?
That's yeah, fair. But
it's a good point.
Again,
I pat myself on the back for not thinking of shooting a horse as the first thing I would do with a horse. But it's a good point, well made.
Should I pat myself on the back for thinking of it so quickly?
If that's what you want to pat yourself on the back for, feel free.
You can put a saddle on.
The point about the animal cruelty people, sure, but as we've talked about earlier, we're not positive there are any regulations in place anymore. We've touched on it multiple times. We're pretty sure there's no OSHA. We're pretty sure there's no real environmental or legal or anything going on. They're like their own mini country with their own rules that apply. Who says that PETA is going to be able to find them either?
Fair point. There's a lot we don't know. I want to take us back to, I think, where we started this, and I apologize for derailing us a little bit. We were talking about first law violations and where we seem to see them. And I brought up a scene with the horse where he lets William do that to his future brother-in-law. But we know that there are more cases here, right?
So, oh, most definitely.
Let's jump in.
Let's touch on the higher level ones first, right? Teresa getting strangled to death. Elsie.
Yep.
Getting strangled to death.
We know that we don't know that she's dead.
Ah, here we go.
So Joe's tinfoil hat approach aside.
Can we acknowledge that strangling is still harm?
Yes.
Is that okay? How about the robot revolution at the end, where they're firing into crowds?
I mean, how about it? That basically just tells us there are no such rules in place.
Yeah, it goes from there. It's, we see by the end of the show that the first law is not respected in any way, shape, or form. There's the body tech that has his thumb bit off right around there. There is the molester body tech that ends up getting killed.
Yep.
Like, all of this is going on. There's clearly no safety protocols in place. There's nothing stopping them. When the which ones? The one with the snake tattoo and...
Armistice, I think, is her name.
Yeah. Armistice and...
Hector.
Hector. When they're going through shooting everyone, that active shooter scenario near the end.
Run, hide, fight.
Yeah. Yeah. The fact that no one actually knows to do that is a whole nother thing that we kind of touched on a little bit. But clearly, it's just violation after violation. They're just mowing down everybody. They're stalking all the humans in the place. If the first law was being respected in any way, shape, or form, half of this wouldn't happen. Ford wouldn't have been able to cover his tracks for half the show.
And as a real quick aside, I want to call something out. Regardless of, the safety that the three laws provides you from having that on your robots is proportional to how hard it is for one jerk to remove it. Ford is apparently able to kick this whole thing off himself. It wouldn't matter if these three laws were totally secure. If you have one bad actor who can remove all of the three laws for all of the hosts in an entire park, it really doesn't matter what your starting state is. You're just waiting for one guy with enough authority to, you know, kick off the robot revolution.
Fair enough, but I think that we also see that they weren't in place before Ford started having this, too. The fact that Arnold is killed by Dolores before the park even opens means they never put any of these safety protocols in place.
Do we think there are any protocols in place? Like, if we had to come up with two or three rules for the park, do we have those?
Are you asking, are there some rules in place as we see in the show, or what are some rules we think we should have?
I think both. I mean, I was specifically asking to the former, but the latter is the obvious place to go afterwards. All right, so if I was going to lay out some rules, and obviously feel free to /please disagree with me, I think that the rules would be, in this order, be as realistic a representation of what it is that you anthropomorphically represent as possible, and number two, obey orders in that order.
Trying to preserve the experience, number one, right, of... be what you're programmed to be, or you're assembled to be, right, in the case of the horse. And then number two, you know, you need to be able to listen to and take, like you said, take orders essentially from the staff so that we can, you know, prevent that revolution that happens at the end.
Wait, take orders only from the staff? Because that's, so here's where you start getting into that gray area, right?
True.
We have hosts that are supposed to be outlaws and villains that running throughout this park. If they are supposed to adhere primarily to their role above all else, you can get into some very uncomfortable situations for the guests.
And we do.
Yeah. And I don't know that having... I mean, we see some of what the Man in Black does throughout the course of the show. If we just took his behavior and popped that into a host doing these things to the guests, is that something we're comfortable with?
I honestly thought he was a host for the first couple of episodes.
So would we want to run the risk of, based on what he does in the first couple episodes, having a host rape one of our clients?
I guess that's why I bring up the rules in that order, is that, like, what is a human being, right? Like, if you're trying to make a host that represents a human being, it is a, you know, an entity with a boundless amount of free will in most instances. But... then if number two is obey orders, like, you essentially have made two rules that philosophically oppose each other.
Right.
So those two rules that you're suggesting, Paul, I think are a decent start to the discussion, but I definitely think we need at least, we need somehow to combine the three laws in some form with them. The second law, where you follow orders, at least needs a tiered order system. You need to, you know, listen to the staff more than you listen to the guests, if you even listen to the guests.
Yeah, I have that in mind too. So if a guest walks in and the guest says, "Hey, host, go kill Teddy. I don't like his face." Like, should it be able to kill Teddy?
I think it should be able to, but its free will probably make it so that it doesn't. That's that again. Like, I think the order. Like, I'm not saying this is the order it should be. This just appears to be the working order in the park to me.
Okay. I mean, if what you're saying by listen to their orders is like listen and consider, not listen and blindly follow, then okay, I could see that not being as immersion breaking as I was concerned about.
But it certainly is a security and safety concern at that point.
Agree 100%. I think that with that in place, you run the risk of a lot of potential harm coming to the clients. I mean, we're going beyond waiver territory at that point. At least for if we were to do it in this type of current legal climate that we find ourselves in today, I think that
no. This is the future. This is
right. It's the future, and
this is after Pence's America, and all the industries have been deregulated. You know, so that's how we find ourselves in this lovely situation.
Pat, would you like to comment on that?
Pat doesn't want to touch that.
I actually wanted to say a similar thing, but stripping out the particulars, like, well, you know, a hypothetical president, Congress willing to remove basically all regulation might be able to get us fairly easily to a place where this was possible. But I wasn't going to be so particular about who. I was going to let the audience fill
Indiana?
That in. No. Maybe.
Maybe.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. So, to summarize what we just talked about, you can blame Indiana for the future of Westworld.
Sold.
Midwest World.
Okay, so to briefly summarize what we've talked about, we recognize that the three laws are important. They have a framework that they create that designs the usability of robots and or hosts in a way that we don't need to worry about humankind being destroyed by what's been developed.
It's the rails of robotics.
It's oh God.
It's not wrong.
Technically, yes. So we also see that there are some things that we want to see done in the park that aren't necessarily possible given a completely strict adherence to this. With all that in mind, there are some changes that we'd want to make. There's probably an approach that we need to take to how we would
actually do it and get it done.
Yeah, implement.
There
That's
you
the
go.
Word I was looking for. Thank you. That's a whole separate discussion that we're probably going to talk at length for. So what we're going to do now is say goodbye for today. And next time we will discuss the implementation and what we think the consequences of that are.
To find out more about this podcast and for the show notes of this episode, please go to dollarsandcentsofwestworld.com. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/dollarsandcentsofwestworld and on Twitter at _DASOW.
Also, I repeated myself like three times, so there's that.
Have you ever listened to the recordings before?
I mean, I could, if you want, I could throw out some things that I know you want to remove, like return on ROI.
I've gotten past that.
Until you just brought it up again.
Yeah.
ROI is like ATM machine, because it's return on investment.
You need to go listen to, was it zero or one? I don't remember.
It's episode zero.
Is it negative one?
What's that? It's not negative one, no.
Sprinkle in some Pat stuff. Throw Paul's digs at Pat after the break.
If you can get a little bit closer, it'd be good.
Okay. I'm afraid of the microphone.
I would be too. It's Pat's microphone, so you don't know where it's been.
It smells like Swanson.
That's going in the
end. Yeah. As soon as it was said, I knew that that was not going to be cut. And God damn it.
It'll at least
it'll just be at the end.
Thank you. There you go. That has been the best part of editing, has been the endings.
The endings are usually the best part.